towards relational sociology. You talk about building a relational foundation for sociology. To start the podcast, can you say a little bit about this project and why you think it's important?
Yeah, okay. Well, so the idea of relational sociology, as I see it, is that we have a sociology which is focused upon issues of relationships between people, interactions between people, and the networks that are formed by the patterns of relationships and interactions between people. I suppose partly from the view that really the essence of what is social is what passes between us, what connects us, and the patterns of connection that we have to one another. And I think also perhaps a sense that interaction to some extent in relationships have been marginalised within sociology, that we've tended to think of them as only occurring on a micro level and tending to be equated in some way with personal relationships. But I want to think about relationships and interactions at different levels. So yes, interactions and relationships between individual human beings, but also interactions and relationships between organisations on a national level, and interactions and relationships between multinational corporations and nation states on a wider global level. And the idea, I suppose, is that much of what we think of as important within sociology can in some way be recast in the context of thinking about how they come into play within these kinds of relationships, or how they emerge from these relationships and influence and impact on these relationships. So and the idea, I think, of emergence is very important. The idea that the furniture of the social world, so to speak, and the structures of the social world are all in some ways generated out of interactions on different levels and on different scales. And in some respects, I think that is to me that is what sociology is about. And on one level, I think that is how sociology was conceived in the first instance by many of the founders. I think you can find evidence that's how Durkheim looked at these things. I think you find evidence that's how Zimmel looked at these things, and Marx too. And I think that perhaps many contemporary sociologists give lip service to that idea on some level, but I'm not sure that we all necessarily think through the implications of that and develop a consistent sociology out of or around it. And I suppose that's kind of what I'm hoping to contribute to, an effort to reorient sociology in that way.
So elaborating upon these latent tendencies and trying to pull them together into a systematic approach?
Yes, yeah, and also I think to pull together different parts of sociology which perhaps deal with different elements of them. I mean, I've been very influenced in recent years, or very interested in recent years, in developments within social network analysis and methods which allow us to map out patterns of relationships and to study the properties of the networks of patterns of relationship and interaction that people are involved in. And that's been very much a preoccupation of mine, probably over the last 5 or 6 years. But it seems to me, I suppose in some ways that's part of the picture, that's part of what's going on. And I think that can be informed through considerations from, for example, interactionist writing within sociology, which perhaps says something more about the particular dynamics of interactions. I think there's interesting work in game theory, not the very basic, very crude economistic game theory, but some of the more innovative and interesting developments within game theory. There is, I suppose, there's even work in conversation analysis. There are lots of different people who, on different levels, are looking at these kinds of ideas. And part of what I want to do is to pull some of those ideas together and sort of see what collectively they might help us to achieve. And
yeah, exactly. When I was struck when reading the book at how diverse the range of intellectual sources drawn upon in it is. And is that a consequence then of trying to pull these different strands together?
I think yes, it is. Yeah, I mean it's a consequence of saying, okay, so let's take this idea that networks and interactions and relationships are fundamental, and as part of trying to develop that, let's just have a look at some of the different ideas within sociology, social psychology, economics, other kinds of disciplines that might enable us to flesh out those basic ideas both theoretically and methodologically. And I suppose some of it comes back to a complaint or a reservation that I have about the way in which sociology is practiced, certainly in the UK, but further afield, in the sense that theories are sometimes regarded with a religious reverence. So you kind of subscribe to one theory, and that means that you can't then borrow from other theories and look elsewhere. You subscribe to one or the other, and I absolutely accept that certain theories are incompatible in certain sorts of respects or have draw upon different assumptions. But I think that actually a lot, I mean, although there are certainly different theories, and there are theories which I can do absolutely nothing with and don't agree with in fundamental respects, I think that there are quite a number of theories, theoretical approaches within sociology and the wider social sciences, which kind of have this basic intuition about the importance of interaction and relationships, and that maybe by identifying interactions and relationships and networks as the fundamental core of what I'm looking at, I create a way in which those different ideas might all be brought to bear in a common space.
And if we become a little bit more pragmatic about how we approach social theory, we can start to combine these into something quite powerful.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it is. I think it is a sort of a pragmatic. It is being pragmatic about it and seeing that sometimes just because people say different things, that doesn't mean to say that they're saying incompatible things, that they might actually be making different contributions to the same basic underlying idea. I would echo that doesn't apply across the board. That doesn't mean that we can just eclectically combine things from here, there and everywhere. I would only seek to bring these ideas together if I believe that they all converge upon this same idea about the importance of interactions and relationships and networks.
Because I found the book quite incisive when it was talking about the way in which the legacy that has tried to surpass theoretical disputes can restrain research programs in the present? I mean, what sort of things do you think we have to leave behind theoretically to make relational sociology feasible?
That's a good question, but a difficult one to answer. I mean, I think that I personally have become more pragmatic in relationship to theory in the respect that I'm increasingly interested in those theoretical ideas which make a difference methodologically, or which will make a difference to the kinds of studies that we do. And I've been less interested in those theories which perhaps just simply seem to provide a new language for kind of talking about things. I'd probably be reluctant, though, having said that, to want to specify, certainly spontaneously off the top of my head, on things that I would necessarily that I would necessarily want to exclude, except to say, I suppose kinds of in the book I situate relational sociology relative to holism on the one hand and individualism, atomism, on the other, and I guess that both of those alternatives are ones that I would want to leave behind. So that would be, I suppose it sort of seems to me that in many respects they are two aspects of the same thing. They want to try to reduce our object of study to a thing, to a substance, whether that be society conceived as a whole and as a thing which is somehow greater than the sum of its parts, or which alternatively want to break it down into its parts and say, well, it's just about individuals and their actions in the way that perhaps some rational choice theories do. And what I am trying to get at is the idea of the idea that relational sociology is coming between those two points. So we can't, individuals don't exist in isolation. Individuals are what they are and become what and who they are only as a consequence of interaction. I mean, we are, from the very start, we're born within the body of our mothers, and from the very moment of our birth, we're necessarily dependent upon or interdependent with other people, and it's only in the context of those relationships that we achieve any kind of autonomy and any kind of capacity for independence and reflectiveness and reflexivity and individuality, if you like. So our individuality is always dependent upon our relationships with other people. So the idea of an ontological individualism seems to me to be a complete non-starter. But to some extent, the idea of a methodological individualism equally seems to me problematic, because we are never isolated individuals. We are always talking to other people, engaging with, interacting with other people, and it seems to me that methodologically we want to try to reflect that as well. But at the same time, that doesn't, to me, add up to some kind of super individual entity, such as functionalism suggests, or such as historicist forms of Marxism, as Popper describes them, and so on, suggest, where the individual, the agents, disappear altogether, and what we have is some higher sense of society or history having its own needs, and in some sense having its organizing what happens within itself as in order to fulfill its historical telos or meet its functional prerequisites. It kind of seems to me that what happens in the social world is still about what agents do, but it's not what agents do as individuals. It's agents as nodes within networks who are interacting with
the interactions and the interactions of the interactions.
Yes, yeah, that it's still probably a process there might be top down and there might be bottom up dimensions to it, but it's never society considered as something superordinate to the individuals who are involved in it, but neither is it the individuals considered separately from their relationships to one another and their interconnectedness.
Where's the approach stand in relation to the macro and micro distinction? Is it looking at the interface, the bridge between them, or is it transcending that distinction?
In the book, I suppose I make a distinction between a dualism of individualism and holism, a dualism of structure and agency, and a dualism of micro and macro. And I see those things, I think, sometimes are run together, but I see those three as separate. So in that sense, for me, micro and macro is really just a matter of numbers, really, and of scale. In many respects, I don't think that there's anything fundamentally different going on. It's not as if something new comes into play when we move away from the microcosm of children playing in a playground to the complexities of the global world order. It's just that it is considerably it's considerably more complicated, and there are an awful lot more people involved and a hell of a lot more interaction and relationships to consider. I suppose the only step up that I might take on that level is that, of course, at the macro level, corporate actors tend to become more important and interesting. So I think we can regard organisations, we can regard governments, trade unions, and so on as actors who interact with one another and form networks and relationships of various kinds. And I think that those higher level corporate actors become more important at the macro level, but even at the macro level, that doesn't mean to say that the small interactions between individuals don't remain important. I mean, I suppose I've been quite interested in small world debates, which are debates about how millions of nodes within a network can actually be connected to one another by relatively short paths, and so you can still get you can still small events at the micro level, I suppose I'd take from this, can sometimes proliferate through networks and have huge effects at the macro level. So I don't think any of this I think it's just about seeing the. I suppose I imagine it sometimes from the idea of a film camera, and we can focus in and get the close up, or we can pan out and we get the bigger view. But I don't think that from the theorist's point of view, there's anything different about those two things. They are just differences in scale. We might need different methods to capture them, and it might be that different mechanisms come into play and have a greater significance at those different levels, but fundamentally it's just a just a, it's the same thing studied from different vantage points. Yeah.
Does the general theoretical approach give any guidance about the kinds of methods and methodological approach you'd use? I mean, what difference does it make to empirical research?
The differences, I think, certainly, as I said earlier, the social network analysis has been very influential for me in my ways of thinking about this. And I think that is a good example of a method which tries to capture relationships between people and to analyse at that which tries to capture at that relational at that relational level. So I think in that sense, it does make that there. That's one example of how a relational approach might be different. I mean, again, I think that there is a tendency within our methods sometimes to individualize. So the sample survey is a sort of an interesting example of that, because in the sample survey, typically we take individuals, we strive, because of sampling theory, to get individuals who aren't connected to one another. Their independence from one another is an important part of the method. And in a sense, our analysis is just an aggregation of what we found for multiple individuals. And to some extent, I think that interview methods can be the same. It can just be about lots of snapshots of individuals and their thoughts and reflections and memories and perceptions and so on. And I think that relational methods would be ones which, at the very least, are aware of that individualizing effect, but also ones which try to transcend it by not just focusing upon the individual, but focusing upon the interaction or the relationship or the network. So network analysis is one way of doing that. But I suppose also other methods which bring interaction to light, I guess various forms of discourse analysis are another, and conversation analysis are another take upon that. And perhaps in some ways, some of the methods that have come out of game theory, and some of the experimental methods that game theorists have tried to work with, would be another way of looking at that. And also, I've been working, still am working on a big project with colleagues here at Manchester. Looking at agent-based modelling and looking at ways of using simulations in social research. And one of the difficulties that relational sociology faces, I think, is that those relationships are hard to capture. Mm. It's easier, perhaps sometimes, to track people down as an individual and ask them a load of questions than it is to actually capture their everyday interactions in a way that is useful and meaningful for sociological purposes. But some of the agent-based modelling and simulations, at the very least, allow you to try to simulate that and to try out ideas by making agents interact in slightly different ways with one another and seeing what the knock-on effects, at the macro level, of those micro level changes might be. And I find that I find that quite an exciting prospect.
Is there something about the theoretical topic area that gives rise to this need for methodological innovation?
Yes, I think it's. I mean, I think there are methodological debates as well which have informed what I what I've done. I've been particularly impressed by Andrew Abbott's work. And I mean, Abbott's, I think, a fascinating character because he is very influenced by the Chicago School, but also a very heavily quantitative social scientist. And so in itself, that's very interesting because he's tried to translate the... he's tried to operationalize, if you like, interactionist ideas within the context of a quantitative and highly sophisticated quantitative sociology. But he's also been very critical of method, particularly, I think, survey methods, but that's perhaps because he's writing in the States where survey methods are tend to be predominant. But because, you know, he sort of says, well, our theories are about action and interaction, but our methods are about variables. And we don't look at the interactions between people, we just look at the interactions between variables. And what we need to do is reorient so that our methods actually reflect our theories, so that we study interactions between people rather than variables. And I find that a very interesting critique. I think it's to some extent of tangential significance in relationship to British sociology, because surveys, big surveys, don't have quite the same role in British sociology and quite the same dominance in British sociology.
Does that explain why social network analysis hasn't yet had the same impact here?
Yeah,
as in the US.
Possibly. I think it does. I think there's a... maybe this is my prejudice, but I think there's a kind of hostility towards or fear of or dislike for anything quantitative or numerical in British sociology, and I think that'll go. I think that'll change. I think that will change. But certainly it's slowed down the reception of things like social networking.
Because personally, I mean, I'm slightly scared of quants, but it doesn't translate into an intellectual hostility towards it. I see quantification as one approach as any other to how to study the social world.
Yeah.
Do you think there is this? What do you think explains the divide? So it sounds like relational sociology is naturally agnostic or hostile towards the notion that quants and quals should be separate.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think it necessitates the use of both, and it necessitates their cooperation. And again, I think, like I said, in terms of the combining of theory, if you have an idea that what is important are interactions and relationships and networks, then there's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't simultaneously look at those things from a qualitative and a quantitative point of view, that you wouldn't count what was going on and also discursively try to give a narrative account of it. But I mean, I suspect that it seems to me that there's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction in British sociology to say, I'll do semi-structured interviews, and that's the way that I'll approach it. And I suspect it. I think that there are lots of problems with the way in which quantitative sociology has been done. And as I have become more interested in quantitative sociology, I have on occasions been gobsmacked at what people get away with in terms of the very, very sophisticated methods of analysis to analyse data, which to my mind has got no or little validity. So I understand that there are quite legitimate concerns that people have about quantitative sociology, but I also think that there can just be a kind of knee-jerk reaction to turn to qualitative methods in British sociology. And part of that perhaps does come from a gap of a lack of understanding of the quantitative methods. I mean, it's not something that I began to engage with until relatively recently, and I'm by no means a sort of what would the word be? I mean, I'm by no means a mathematical whiz kid. You know, I don't. I've had to build up what I understand from it, probably from a fairly low starting point. And it was only when I decided that the fact that I found it all a bit terrifying and difficult to understand shouldn't really be an obstacle, and that I ought to just try and plow my way through it, that I've kind of got anywhere that I've got anywhere with it. But I think I suppose that was probably what stopped me from doing it for a long time, and I kind of imagine that perhaps lots of other people don't for the same reason. Like I say, not because there aren't legitimate problems with quantitative approaches.
But the theoretical arguments can be used as an excuse not to engage
sometimes, I think. Yeah. And I think that there's been so much interesting, inventive, quantitative innovation over the last 10, 15 years, the developments in network analysis, the kinds of things that Abbott's done with sequence analysis, lots of methods that use that facilitate the analysis of categorical data, like multiple correspondence analysis and the various data reduction and scaling techniques, which I think are much more appropriate to sociological subject matter and fit to a relational way of doing things. And so I think that there are lots of opportunities there. There are lots of interesting things that could be done with this material if sociologists just gave them a try and just and had a, you know, tried to engage with them and see,
just interacted more.
Yeah, interacted more, and also from the statistical side and from the mathematical side. We probably need more statisticians and mathematicians who can express themselves in a clear way that people like me and sociologists are going to understand them. And I've been quite lucky in the sense of finding a few authors and finding a few colleagues who will take the time to explain things in a plain language that I can then understand. And at least gives me a basis on which to then progress to try and understand some of the more convoluted and complicated stuff. Mm.
And there's one final question then, and it's quite a broad question. What do you think the future holds for relational sociology, as well as for social theory in general?
I feel quite optimistic. In the sense that I've had some good feedback for the book, and since doing it, I've heard about other people who are doing various different kinds of takes on relational sociology or something similar to that. I mean, it might be because the community of scholars that I'm moving these days is involves a lot of social network analysts and people who you might expect to be positively disposed towards these kinds of things. But generally, people seem quite positive, I think, about the approach. I feel it's moving in the right direction. I mean, it may well fall flat on its arse, and you know, in a year or two's time, but at the moment it's moving in the right, it seems to be moving in the right direction. But I suppose there is the general, the more general concern about how social theory is going to fare in the, not so much in the intellectual environment, but in the wider economic and educational environment that we're all in. I mean,
but in terms of some of the things that we've spoken about, it points towards quite a practical role for theory.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mediating between different disciplines and different approaches.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think it can, and I think it. I mean, it can. There are certainly opportunities there for interdisciplinarity. The approach that I mentioned about with the agent-based modelling earlier. I mean, we are working in there. There's a team involving sociologists, a psychologist, physicists, a mathematician, and a computer scientist. And so there's a kind of partly through the network analysis, there's a common language that people can speak and can
bridge these different
So on that level, and also I mean, I think there is a there is, in terms of relational sociology, there is an opportunity to say, well, actually, we could make a difference to the way in which the world is analysed. And I think that that does have practical import. I think that that is of significance. And I could imagine it... I could imagine it having a practical... outcome and being valued practically. And I suppose it's interesting in that sense that I think that relational within the context of relational sociology, because the methods and the theory are brought together more closely, there is a sense in which you wouldn't be able to use the methods really unless you'd had some thought about the theory, or that perhaps that's not strictly true. Perhaps you could just do the methods without having any thought for the theory, but it would be more obviously problematic than it sometimes is in some forms of empirical and empiricist social research. I mean, I think you really need the theory to tell you why what you're doing methodologically is significant,
or not.
Yeah. And so in that sense, there's less opportunity for theory and methods to become separated from one another, and perhaps therefore less opportunity for theorists and methodologists to become separated from one another.
Which so, clarifies the relationship of social theory to the discipline as a whole.
Yes, yeah. I think it could, I suppose it's the theorist in a more practical, pragmatic,
hands-on
mode.
Kind of form.
Yeah. But the theoretical issues that come out are still fascinating and and very important and very challenging, I think. So, and still very theoretical, if you like. You know, it's not as if the theorist somehow has to. They might have to pitch in at a slightly lower level of abstraction. They might need to be more concrete, but there are still tough logical challenges to be engaged in, I think.
Thanks very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.